Welcome back to Cindy Palin Music and Words as we explore the theme of grief by interviewing a very special guest in hopes to glean some wisdom in how to shape my new children's book further. Today I'd like to introduce our special guest, Rebecca Orr. We understand every grief journey is unique, and I just want to thank you, Rebecca, for agreeing to come and educate me a little bit more on your experience, and then perhaps I can use these lessons to shape my writing and ultimately encourage and comfort others.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell us more about you.
About myself? Well, my name's Rebecca, as you know. I lost my husband 12 years ago in a workplace tragedy when I was just 25 and pregnant with our daughter, Caitlin. And so the last 12 years have been a journey of coming back from that and how sudden and unexpectedly losing Lance had affected me mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically, and kind of brought me to where I am now and the happiness and contentment I have now, the peace I have, the renewed sense of, a renewed passion of how our culture and society view grief and view those who are grieving and just come alongside other people who have lost a loved one.
What an unimaginable loss, Rebecca. And I'm so glad you mentioned Lance's name. Through my limited grief training and knowledge, I've learned names are important. Let me just recap. You said that it was a sudden loss. You were expecting your first child, and he's been gone 12 years.
That's right.
I appreciate you mentioning how you were impacted on so many levels. You mentioned that you've come a long way in your grieving journey. What has helped you?
Counseling. A lot of counseling.
Awesome.
I kind of spent the first 7 years just in a fog and numb for the first 7 years. So I didn't deal with the grief appropriately. Kind of stuffed it all down, didn't want to talk about it, didn't want to acknowledge it. And plus I was busy raising a little person. As well. So about 5 years ago, I kind of hit that emotional brick wall where I just had no choice but to confront what was consuming me, which obviously is the grief and loss. Yeah, so then I started counseling, and then I found Threads of Life and worked with them and learned tools of how to better show grief and loss and the appropriate way to express it.
You mentioned Threads of Life. Tell me more about that.
Threads of Life is an organization who support, here in Canada, who support families who've lost a loved one to a workplace tragedy, or if they've been injured or have had an illness related to the job. And so they come alongside and support them. We have family forums annually. One for Western Canada, which is for Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and Alberta. They have a central forum, which is for Ontario, and they have an Atlantic forum, which is for New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, those places out in the Atlantic. And they have sessions, and they come alongside and support you. So I found them 5 years ago. I am a speakers trainer with them, so I took speakers training where I then can go and speak to companies about the importance of workplace safety, speak on my own story, my own tragedy, on why I find workplace safety so important. I'm also a family support guide as well, which I can come alongside and support other families who've lost someone to a workplace tragedy as well, and support them, because you just feel like you're alone, you feel like you're on your own. There's no one else that gets it. And so when you have someone else that comes alongside of you and says, hey, I've been there and I know what it feels like, and let me just come alongside and support you, with no judgment and just a lot of empathy and compassion, it comes a long way, goes a long way to helping you heal as well. And by continuously sharing my story, it has helped me heal as well. Although I'm not a big fan of that word, but it helps me grow and helps me heal as well, and just to be the person that I am today.
I hear you. The word healing can sometimes imply that everything's fixed, everything is all better. So, Rebecca, was it the counselor that introduced you to Threads of Life?
No, actually. So I found a book, literally fell on my lap, called The Widow's Awakening, which a lady by the name of Marianne Pope wrote a book about her first year of widowhood. Her husband was killed in the line of duty in Calgary. He was a police officer. And she wrote a book about her own experiences. And really, it fell literally in my lap. And so I, on a whim, reached out to her and emailed her and kind of gave my own backstory. I had never read a book that I felt was just me. It was speaking directly to me. I don't think I ever laughed or cried so much as I did reading that book. If you ask my mom, she will say that that is kind of was the catalyst that gave me the permission to start grieving, was that book. And so then I reached out to her, kind of told her my backstory, and she was the one that told me about Threads of Life. She was already part of them. And then reached out to Threads of Life and was like, hey, I know this really great girl, Rebecca. I think she'd be really great with the organization. And it literally was a dive in head first. I had no idea what I was expecting. I had no idea what to expect. And I just kind of dove right in. So it was kind of all at the same time, counseling, Threads of Life.
Right.
It kind of was a snowball effect that kind of just helped to where I am.
Right. So I'm really impressed that there is a support group that is specific.
Oh, it's huge.
It makes me wonder if there are grief support groups for children.
I'm not 100% sure. Threads of Life, kind of once they hit 12 or 13, then they can start coming to the sessions at family forums and stuff. But kind of before then, it kind of, they don't as much.
Right.
So I'm not quite sure. Caitlin at this point wasn't really ready to. She wasn't really wanting to. I mean, obviously her grief is a little bit more complicated. She never knew her dad.
Right.
So it's a much more complicated grief for her. It's more of a grief of what you didn't have.
Right.
More so of what you did have and then you lost it. So at this point, and a lot of counselors won't take kids until they hit 12 too.
Okay.
So we kind of had to wait until she hit 12 to kind of decide what the next thing is. So I'm not quite sure if there is. I've never really looked.
Many times I'm told people who experience loss come together and create a new tradition of some kind to celebrate their loved one. Do you have any kind of a new tradition like that?
We kind of do things on May 8th. So that was the day he died. So we often do something on May 8th, whether it's, well, we didn't quite, I guess, the last couple of years, but due to COVID. But we often will go to the cemetery. Caitlin loves it up there. So we will often go up to the cemetery. At Christmas time, for a while, we haven't the last couple of years, but for a while we would give to an organization around the world, third world countries. We would all buy something, whether, you know, bicycles, goats,
right,
whatever Bibles, whatever the thing is, and kind of did that in his memory.
Okay, in his memory.
In his memory as well. So we've done that. Other than that, no. Caitlin has a book. My sister made a book before she was born of things people's stories people had of Lance and pictures of Lance.
Yeah.
So Caitlin, that's Caitlin's prized possession. She has all these pictures and little things that people had said. So she has that she often takes to, you know, show and tell or
that's wonderful.
Show people. So, but no, not too much. Christmas was his favorite time of year. So
okay.
We try to kind of, you know, do something around Christmas a little bit here and there, but
good to know.
Just kind of spend time with family.
I really value the opportunity you've given me and our listeners to hear about your experience and celebrate Lance today by remembering.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us again, Rebecca, about the book you mentioned and the author's name?
It's A Widow's Awakening, and it's by Marianne Pope.
Awesome. And then you mentioned Threads of Life and counseling. Were there any other things in particular that brought you comfort?
It's tricky. To be honest, I don't have a whole lot of memories of those initial days, weeks, months, years. Especially the first 2 years are kind of a haze at best. I kind of went into kind of a shutdown mode. And with it went all emotions and all rational thought. That kind of went with it. But I appreciated the people that they were sorry. There wasn't any grand gestures. I found in those early days, the people that made the big grand gestures of, oh, we're always going to be there for you, Caitlin, and oh, we're always going to do all these things for you, are the people that aren't in the picture today. And the people that were quietly just on the outskirts of the scenes and doing things are the people that are still in the picture today. And so I found just, you know, the I'm sorry's. And as difficult as that is to say, because you always want to say more, the simple I'm sorry goes a long way. People that obviously remember him, that ask questions, help keep that memory alive too.
Yeah.
But I definitely was more in a state of shock. I convinced myself I was fine.
I'm inspired to adapt your insight into my children's book. It makes me wonder, how are others comforting this little girl, my main character? Is she in shock? Are there people around her that want to make a grand gesture? Who is in the picture, saying the right things, doing the right things, and is her memory affected? And maybe not in the book, but down the road when she reads it, will she be able to remember more of what she went through initially? I find it very significant that you have shared with us that your memory was not very clear in the beginning.
I don't trust myself. Well, a lot of time I don't trust. Yeah.
Is it fair to say that maybe it's a blessing that your memory was a haze in the beginning? Maybe that's the wrong thing to say.
I had to get there. I had to get there to the point. I mean, some of them are starting to come back now. There's plenty of conversations where I'll be like, do you remember when I did this and what in the world was I thinking? But yeah, I mean, I had to get to that spot where I was okay with that. A lot of it won't come back. And that I was okay with how I reacted, that it was a completely normal thing. I mean, obviously at the time I thought I was losing my mind. I mean, there's not many 25-year-old widows that are around that are able to come alongside and support you, because it's not common at 25.
Yeah.
And so you're isolated and you're right. And then on top of that, I was pregnant on top of that. So, you know, there's a lot of moving pieces that played a role. But definitely at the time, it definitely was. I don't think I would have been able to manage. I don't think I would have been able to handle it very well if everything had hit me at the time. I mean, I was numb for 7 years. So out of the 12. So I think
7 years is a long time.
It's a long time. And I don't recommend it for other people.
No.
Like, don't be like me. but it was a hamster wheel that I was on that I couldn't get off. I was convinced I was fine, which means then... And people are uncomfortable with grief. And so when people are uncomfortable with grief, they don't want to hear that you're not fine.
Right.
And so I channeled that. And so it was a lot easier to lie and to tell the people what they wanted to see and what they wanted to hear, which was, you're fine. But there was many times where I sat there and went, which one of us is stupider, you or me? The fact that you think a 25-year-old... pregnant person who just lost her husband to a workplace tragedy suddenly and unexpectedly is fine, or me that I think I'm fine. But it was a continuous hamster wheel that took 7 years to get off of.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't want to go back to it now.
No.
I like where I am at now. I'm definitely better mentally and emotionally now in the last 5 years than I was in the first 7 years.
Absolutely. You said that people are uncomfortable with grief. And in our discomfort, sometimes we will, especially as Christians, give someone who has just experienced loss and tragedy a scripture verse. What are your thoughts there?
I grew up in the church. I have been around it my whole life. Don't. One word, don't. You know what? It really depends on the person. It depends on the situation.
Right.
I don't like it personally myself.
Yeah.
I get angry and I maybe not lash out to somebody cause I tend to channel things, but, it frustrates me because I already know all that. I know all about it. I know what the Bible says. I know that, you know, I know it all.
Right.
The last thing I need to hear is more of it.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't help. Mm-hmm. At least it didn't for me. It didn't help in the situation. It didn't relieve it. Instead, it almost for myself made that hamster wheel go longer.
Right.
The more people would throw things at me, the more suddenly it was like, oh, well, I can't possibly show you that I'm weak, or I can't possibly show you that I'm struggling with it, with solo parenting and with raising a kid in the midst of grief and loss and what this does to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the facade gets bigger, the walls get higher, the masks get heavier.
Right.
And at least for myself personally, that is what happened.
Rather than recite a scripture or fill the air with a quick answer, I think we need to learn to be quiet and to learn how to be comfortable with silence in these situations.
But we're like that in everyday life.
Yeah.
So I think we have to learn in everyday life just to...
Yeah.
That silence isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Right.
It just, you know, I don't know. I've learned to read a situation, I guess. I mean, I guess that's what all... I guess when you lose someone so suddenly and unexpectedly... And grief is grief and loss is loss. And no one loss is worse than the other. And no grief is worse than the other. But I had to learn to not, make mine less, which is what I tend to do. Still do. I'll often say, oh, well, it could have been so much worse. It could have been so much worse, than it was. But I had to learn not to diminish, our
experience.
That it was still grief is grief and loss is loss. But sudden and unexpected loss is a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
Your last conversation you have with that person is the last conversation you've had with that person.
Right.
Good, bad, or the ugly, that's the last conversation you get.
Yeah.
Which puts a heavier guilt on the person that is left behind.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to learn not to diminish,
yes,
diminish
absolutely.
Mine, which was a difficult thing to do, but to learn to sit in silence, which isn't an easy thing to do.
No.
Because you want to feel like you want to make things better. I mean, I still am. I was on the other side of grief. And so
right.
When I was grieving, suddenly I do. I want to say more than just, hey, I'm really sorry. Let me just come alongside you.
Yes.
And be there for you because you want to fix it. You want to make things better. But the more you try to fix it, the more you make it worse.
Yes, absolutely.
So I think it's a difficult in general.
In sharing your experience with us, Rebecca, more and more, I think we're on the right track with this children's book, as we're not trying to explain away behaviors. We're not trying to give any pat answers. We want to tell the story as if we are seeing grief through the little girl's eyes. Do you think that this is going to be a helpful tool?
Oh, I think so. I think it's a great idea. I think that's what compassion is, or an empathy is. You come alongside and you're not telling someone how to feel or how to act. You come alongside and you can be like, hey, yeah, me too, whatever the case may be. So yeah, and I mean it's like the book The Widow's Awakening. It was her account of what she experienced, which then, you know, I come along, I read the book, and I'm like, oh my goodness, yeah, me too. And wow, it's great to have somebody that gets it, that understands it. And so yeah, I think it's important to try to come from the eyes of the person that's going through it themselves, because everybody views it differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can stand beside a widow who lost her husband suddenly, unexpectedly, and she has a completely different viewpoint on things that never bothered me, or that never affected me in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
But I still get what she's going through.
Right.
I think we just have to be careful that we don't say that this is the be end all. Like you can only feel these things.
Right.
because that's not how grief works. There's no as much as they say there's 7 steps to grieving,
right?
It doesn't go in the 7 steps of grieving. You can go from point A to point Z in a matter of seconds and be back at point C. Like it kind of is, it's all over the place. There is no, you're going to feel this, then you're going to feel this, then you're going to feel this, then you're going to feel this.
Yeah. This has been Grief Talk with Rebecca Orr and Cindy Palin, part 1. Stay tuned for next Monday as we explore grief further in part 2. This is Cindy Palin, Music and Words, on Anchor FM by Spotify.